This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
First off, feels unbelievable to sign and get the business side done. And, you know, that's, you know, a big step in the process for me and my family. And, you know, I'm very thankful for that. Since the draft, it's kind of been the same as my summer routine, just been working out every day, skating a lot. And the last 2-3 weeks, I've really been in preparation for the World Junior Camps.
That is Winnipeg Jets 2020 first round draft pick, newly signed Cole Perfetti, speaking to the media earlier
Mom
this
spaghetti.
Week.
I know, I was just going to say, I think the exact same thing whenever I hear his name.
You think the Eminem lyric?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm glad that you and Ezzy are on the same wavelength. I'm not sure what that means for either of you two, but Dave, you might want to look into that a little bit deeper real quick. Anyways, that's Cole Perfetti speaking to the media earlier this week, having signed his entry-level contract with the Winnipeg Jets. And with that, we say good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg, alongside Dave Minuka, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. 2 hours, an abbreviated edition of the show for you this morning. 2 hours of hockey talk for you, leading right into TSN's coverage of round three of the Masters from Augusta, Georgia. We'll keep you up to date on everything going on at Augusta before our coverage starts this morning at 11 a.m. We want to hear from you. You can send us your tweets at Illegal Curve. You can also reach us via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. Today's IC question of the day. In honor of the Masters, which current member of the Winnipeg Jets organization, player, coach, executive, would you like to play a round of golf with, and why? Send us your comments at Illegal Curve. Send us your comments via text. We'll read some on air throughout the course of the program. Gentlemen, I've been talking for too long. How are you both on this Saturday morning? It's nice to see you. I hope you're staying happy and healthy.
Yeah, it's nice to be on air, obviously, with everything that's going on in our province. You know, we're lucky that we're still on air, so hopefully everybody's being safe out there. But yeah, you mentioned the Masters. You know, Dustin Johnson, I think he's tied for the lead, or he was tied for the lead. Always pulling for him, you know, being one of the great ones, married to the great one's daughter, right? But, you know, pretty weird that we're watching this tournament in November, right? Because to me, it's always the beginning of spring, but obviously that couldn't happen this year. But yeah, it's definitely a quiet part of the year. Not a lot of Jets news. We had the Perfetti signing, you know, which is good for us. We're going to talk about that, you know, here today. But I think it's going to get very interesting and very busy, very quick, boys, you know, with the NHL having their conference call and basically still adamant that the season is going to start early January. And I don't know what you guys think, but I still think early January is very optimistic.
Well, we'll talk about that throughout the course of the next 2 hours as well. Want to hear your comments? Send this to us at Illegal Curve via text message 129090 as well. Dave, good morning to you. Nice to see you. You were on the Cole Perfetti conference call earlier this week. You know, a well-spoken young man, obviously an articulate young man, Mr. Perfetti. What was your main takeaway, if you had one, from that conference call or Zoom call, as the case may be?
Yeah, I just thought that he was. I mean, he has a very well-spoken, very Josh Morrissey esque in that regard when you hear him speak. And I think one of the overarching, you know, kind of themes of the call was simply that, you know, of his support system and how thankful he was for the people in his lives kind of helping, guiding him to this point. The other thing you really got a sense of is his desire to try and make the Jets. And, you know, it's all kind of falling in line for him. I mean, again, you know, the idea of Cole Perfetti playing for the Jets in 2021 seems unlikely. I mean, a lot of us were thinking 21-22 was the more likely scenario for him. But based on the way things are, you know, obviously he's off to Red Deer for the selection camp right now for the World Juniors. And provided, obviously, he makes Team Canada, would play in the World Juniors, which would then, in theory, based on if everything falls into place, leapfrog him into an opportunity to have an extended kind of chance with the Winnipeg Jets. And thereafter, obviously, if he doesn't do that, then I think in February, the early part of February, is when the OHL, his Saginaw Spirit season, would get underway. But so that was kind of the impression I got from him, was just that, you know, look, and the reality is, what first-round pick or what player isn't going to say that their goal is to make the NHL team and force the team to make a tough decision? I'm just saying from this kid's, you know, you listen to him, you get the sense that, you know, that's going to be a real driving force, and it's setting up a little bit better than it would normally.
Well, do you think those extra 3 months that he's going to have this year, you know, let's assume that, you know, training camp gets started, you know, NHL training camp, the season gets started somewhere in January. Mm-hmm. He'll go to the World Juniors. If we are going to assume he's going to make the World Juniors, you know, he's got a bit of, you know, he's got an extra lead time. He's got extra runway compared to a normal season,
right,
where he'd be in training camp in September and then, you know, the season starting in October. Those extra few months that he's getting as a result of the delay in the start of the season, do you think that's, you know, giving him an advantage and maybe changing your mind as to what percentage of possibility there is that he's actually going to make the Jets this coming year?
Well, first off, we have to clarify what making the Jets means in terms of, you know, and there's a difference between making the Jets at the beginning of the season and sticking with the Jets,
right,
for,
right,
the whole season, because I absolutely think he has a really good shot at playing some games at the beginning of the season, as mm-hmm. Dave mentioned, you know, whether that's in early January, mid-January, early February, I think there's a good chance that he's going to play those games. I think it's a bit of a long shot that he'll play the whole season with the Jets, but, you know, it's similar to Ville Heinola, guys, right? Like, as opposed to Cole Perfetti, I mean, Cole Perfetti, we know, goes 10th overall to the Jets. There's a good chance he could have gone 4th, 5th, 6th overall. His skill level is higher. I was thinking about this, you know, as I was preparing for the show, you know, like, he has more skill of any Jets prospect, all due respect to, you know, Christian Vesalainen and, you know, Ville Heinola, some others, since Patrick Laine. Really, if you think about it, they haven't had a prospect with this offensive upside since Patrick Laine. So when you're talking about Heinola, yeah, that was a surprise that he made the team and he played some games at the beginning of the season. Nobody's going to be surprised if Perfetti starts the season on the Jets because of his skill level. I mean, this is a guy, and again, we all know the numbers, the 100-plus points with Saginaw in the Ontario Hockey League. And Drew mentions the World Juniors. You mentioned Dave was on the conference call. I wasn't, but I, you know, watched it because I'm a good boy and I watch everything and read everything that Dave posts on the website. But I mean, what comes across is he was really disappointed, guys, that he didn't make that World Junior team last year.
Right.
And you can say whatever you want about the World Juniors and its importance. And you guys know that, you know, I'm someone who follows the World Juniors very close. And we all do. Most of us do here. But I think when you have a player that really wants to make the team, and that is still very important to a lot of these young NHL prospects, and you know that Perfetti, especially in a year which has seen no OHL hockey, and we might not see OHL hockey till February at the earliest, you know that he really wants to make that team, and, you know, he probably wants to follow that up with a good training camp with the Jets, and he wants to start the season. Now, I mean, we can, you know, debate that, and I'm sure we're going to debate that, you know, in the weeks and months ahead, you know, where he's going to slot in. But yeah, I wouldn't expect Cole Perfetti to start the season in a top six role. But that's not the point. He's 18 years old. Like, you have to remember that, right? So he's going to be happy, you know, wherever Paul Maurice plays him. But yeah, I think, you know, there's a really good shot because, like I said, he's so skilled that I think that gives him the advantage. And I think the Jets want to give him a little NHL experience at the beginning.
You know, if he performs well, and we, you know, as he mentioned it, that there doesn't seem to be an obvious spot for him this year on the Jets.
Right.
You know, next year, you know, if Paul Stastny's gone, then there's sort of that natural seamless fit if he's able to perform at that second line center role or, you know, however that sort of plays itself out. That's why this year, I mean, to your point, Ezzy, I think you're right in that, you know, he's probably only going to get maybe some game action with the Jets because there doesn't seem to be that obvious spot for him to play. You're not going to play him in a, you know, in a fourth line center role because that doesn't make any sense. He needs to play legitimate minutes against, you know, in legitimate, you know, in legitimate competition. You know, playing 6 or 8 minutes a game doesn't make that a lot of sense. But, you know, if he performs well, you know, it seems like that's almost it's a good problem for the Jets to have in that he might be forcing his way into the lineup some way or somehow, Dave.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one thing we've seen with this organization is that they're not in any rush to move their prospects. I mean, look at Mark Scheifele, right? So you see a number of these guys, well, whether it's, you know, recently, I mean, there's not many Patrick Laine who are going to step into your lineup and have an immediate impact the way he did. So that is the exception to the rule. And we've seen every single prospect primary with the Jets, I think, you know, play at least a little bit of development before they're able to make that jump. Yeah. So again,
the only one is Laine,
that's what I was going to say. Yeah. Laine is really the only guy who's been able to do it. So you think about that and you think to yourself, well, it's all stacked up. So I'm with Ezzy. I really think that this is setting itself up to be, you know, give him a look. And especially, look, we don't know what it's going to look like when the NHL comes back. Are there going to be expanded rosters? We don't know what's happening with the AHL. The AHL really is gearing towards a February restart. So, you know, there's no, it's more a function of, will he have a chance to, the Jets are obviously going to keep him because you may as well have him practicing with the pro club.
Rather than stop playing again.
That's right.
You know, depending on when
the OHL
restarts.
So you keep that continuity for him. But I just think the way it's set up for this year, you don't see that natural spot for him based on the configuration of the team. But will he be able to force himself in the following year? That's the question.
Right, and there always is the chance. I think you guys would agree. There's always the chance that, you know, Perfetti spends the entire 2021 season with the Jets. It's because, like we talked about, I mean, and again, we're not trying to hype him up too much, but you ask any of the scouts, you know, most of the scouts, and, you know, we've had some of them on the show, and all of them have, most of them, I shouldn't say all of them, have said, you know, that Perfetti dropped to the Jets at 10. Like, he's got that top five skill. Mm-hmm. So when you have that top five skill, I mean, there always is the chance. Like, yeah, he's probably not going to be a first line center or second line center, but maybe he plays so well in the first five, six, seven games that, you know, he has to stick with the Jets and he's the third line center. Or maybe they move him to the wing. Like, again, we're getting very far ahead of ourselves, guys, but
these are good problems. These are good scenarios to deal with.
And Jets fans should get excited about Perfetti. And again, we're not saying that he's going to win, you know, the Calder Trophy this year. And we're not going to, you know, say that he's going to score 90 points in his first season, but he really is that good, right? Like, when you have scouts saying that he could go as high as fourth or fifth overall, and they were surprised that the Jets got him at 10th overall, you know that he's going to be a very good NHL player. So yeah, there's a good chance he makes the World Junior team, and there's a good chance that he plays some games with the Jets. And after that, who knows? But the important thing is he's on that right track. He's healthy and he has a really good shot of making the World Junior team. And this World Junior team is going to be not just Canada. The entire World Junior tournament is going to be stacked.
Well, that's what I was going to say. How beneficial do you think will that World Junior experience be this year? I mean, it'd be a surprise to, I think, all three of us in the room if he didn't make the team to begin with. So let's go on the assumption that he makes that team. You know, how big of a, you know, I think that'll be sort of a level up in competition over your typical OHL season in that you are playing against, you know, a better World Junior tournament than you would be in a typical year because so many of those players would typically be with their parent clubs at the NHL level.
Yeah, it can only help him, right? Like, he was already going to be going into training camp. Like, even if he didn't make the World Juniors, he would be going into Jets training camp having a real good shot at playing some games at the beginning of the season, right? But when you're playing the best under 20 international players in the world, and not only are you playing them, but, you know, you're playing a key role, which I think Perfetti will play a key role as an 18-year-old, because we know 18 and 19-year-olds, you know, play bigger roles than 17-year-olds in this tournament, right? So, yeah, it can only help him, Drew. And, you know, I'm really excited for the World Juniors this year, and it has a lot to do with the fact there's no hockey really happening.
There's nothing else going on.
So,
you have plenty of time.
You know, TSN's going to start hyping that up real quick. But, yeah, Perfetti's going to be going up against the best international players in the world. And, you know, I think Jets fans, again, have a lot to be excited when you talk about, you know, his skill level and, you know, the type of things that he can do on the ice.
You know, the only thing I was going to add was that I thought was interesting from the conference call was the talking about his performance bonuses and how he, I think it was Jay Bell who we're having on later on the show, was asking him about that and whether he had any involvement in his contract negotiations and if whether any of those, and it was like whether he could make the all-rookie team. And it was interesting to hear the thought process with him as to how he kind of picked those performance bonuses, the ones he kind of keyed in on as possible. So, look, I think this kid, and again, we don't know whether the Jets will play him as a center or as a winger. You know, it's possible that they ease him in because
you're
know,
saying to start this year.
To start this year.
Yeah. Long term, he's definitely.
No, long term. But I mean, look, the reality is Jack Roslovic was your long term, was supposed to be your second line center replacement for Brian Little.
It's still hard not to believe that they didn't mishandle that in some regard.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but I'm just saying, so it's possible that, you know, we on the show have talked about for a long time that Adam Lowry would be your, ideally your fourth line center. Mm-hmm. And then you have a, you know, scoring third line. So you have a top nine that can all produce. Well, Perfetti on that, you know, on the wing would still give you some very good opportunity to put the puck in the back of the net. So it's just one of those possibilities that the Jets will have. It'll be a good thing to have, as we talked about throughout the course of this segment.
Something to certainly keep an eye on as the hockey-free months of November and most of December will continue up until the World Juniors get underway and you can enjoy that action. When we come back, the NHL Network has gone and ranked some of the league's top 20 wingers. The Jets have three in the category, Wheeler, Connor, Laine. We discuss their rankings and the top five rankings and everything else. Much more to come You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Shifley, he will sprint up the middle to the near side for Kyle Connor, moving and shooting. He scores! Now for Pullman, let a shot go to Duncan in front. They score! Patrick Laine at the side of the net.
Peters with a little bit of room, dashes down the left side, backdoor, score! Nikolai Ehlers with the speed, the feed, and Blake Wheeler with the finish.
A montage of goals from Kyle Connor, Blake Wheeler, Patrick Laine. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So the reason we played that montage is the NHL Network is coming out with their rankings of the top 20 wingers in the NHL, and to the surprise of a very few, Wheeler, Connor, and Laine have made that top 20. What's surprising to me is the order in which the NHL Network has decided to rank those three, with Blake Wheeler leading the pack of those three at number 11, Kyle Connor coming in at number 12, and Patrick Laine coming in at number 14. The top five, just for argument's sake, Artemi Panarin, David Pastrnak, Nikita Kucherov, Alex Ovechkin, and Patrick Kane. Let's start with the Jets, who made that ranking. I mean, no surprise, I think, that those three are there, but I would quibble with the order of Blake Wheeler being ahead of both Connor and Laine
really,
in that ranking.
That's what you thought of when you saw this list? I'll tell you a few things that I thought of when I saw this list. First off, David Satriano, I think, does more fantasy hockey for NHL.com, if I'm not mistaken. You have to take rankings always with a grain of salt.
No question.
Nikolai Ehlers is not on this list. I think there's a strong argument Nikolai Ehlers is the most talented winger on the Jets. First and foremost, where's Taylor Hall on this list? 3 years ago, Taylor Hall was the MVP of the league. You're telling me Taylor Hall isn't a top 20 winger in the NHL?
I mean, Taylor Hall probably, I would probably have Taylor Hall above a guy like Vladimir Tarasenko right now, because Tarasenko hasn't been able to be healthy for the last couple of seasons. But, I mean, so that's a justifiable comment on your part there. But Taylor Hall has been, you know, trending downwards the last couple of years, since his MVP year.
He's been trending a little bit downwards, but, like, what are we talking about? Like, if he was a top five left winger 3 years ago, now all of a sudden he's not even in the top. That's just me. This is subjective.
Yeah.
But
totally.
Again, Hart Trophy 3 years ago. And 3 years ago, yes, it's 3 years ago. That's not like we're talking about 10 years ago. That's just me. I think Taylor Hall is still a top five left winger, and I would put him in the top 10, let alone top 20. That's just me.
Forgetting about Taylor Hall for a minute, I think you're onto something with the omission of Nikolai Ehlers, and I think that speaks to the fact that outside of Winnipeg, you know, maybe people don't really know how good Nikolai Ehlers is. He doesn't necessarily have the flashy goal totals that Kyle Connor does. He doesn't have the highlight reel shot that Patrick Laine does.
He's got a pretty good shot.
I know he does, but I mean,
nobody has as good a shot as Laine.
That's my point.
No, I'm with you. And look, I think that all four of these, what I'm saying is all four of these guys should be in the top 20.
I think you could.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying that, like, to me, I don't care about, you know, if Wheeler's ranked higher than Laine or Connor, like, whatever, 11, 12, 13. That's subjective. I mean, you could get 10 people to put together their top 20 lists, and they'll probably have these Jets ranked in different orders, right? So I just think Ehlers should be in there because I think at this point in his career, you know, he's the most skilled. All around wingers, yeah, okay, Blake Wheeler, he's got that veteran experience. You know, he's definitely a guy, you know, that has been, you know, driving the bus for a while. But as we've talked about in previous weeks, I mean, Nikolai Ehlers has shown over the last few years, especially, you know, with some of the career totals he's been putting up, that he deserves an increased role. I've talked about it. You know, he should be on the first power play. I'm not the only one, you know, who's talked about that. So that's all I'm saying. And, you know, and in terms of, you know, the other rankings, like, to me, Mark Stone, I could see him being in the top three. Like, again,
yeah, limit,
you know, if you're talking, like, again, David Satriano, I believe, you know, I've never met him, and I don't think we've ever had him on. I think he does more fantasy stuff. Mm-hmm. So, again, take it with a grain of salt. But if we're talking about overall wingers, mm-hmm. like, I'll take Mark Stone in my top three, certainly top five winger in the NHL. Like, if we're talking offense, yeah, Artemi Panarin is one of the best offensive wingers in the entire game. And same thing with David Pastrnak. They're one and two, right? So you're not going to, obviously those guys are going to be in the top five, but I look at this list and, you know, I'm just saying, like, you know, Mark Stone, number nine to me as a winger, like, okay, it seems a little bit low.
To Ezzie's point there, Dave, how about, you know, this as a bit of an exercise right now, you know, of the, you know, including Ehlers, take the Jets' top four wingers.
Sorry, Stone's 10.
Including Ehlers, mm-hmm. take the Jets' top four wingers. How would you rank them?
On their own, you're saying?
On their own. Forget about the top 20. The, you know, take the Ehlers, Connor, Laine, and Wheeler. How would you rank those top? How would you have them 1 through 4?
But what are you ranking them on? Well, like, are you ranking them all on their overall game?
All-around impact. Okay, okay. All-around impact on the game.
Well, I'd probably go Ehlers, Connor, Wheeler. No, Laine, Wheeler.
So you would have Ehlers, Connor, Laine, Wheeler?
Yeah.
Okay. I think.
See, Dave just said Ehlers is number one, and he's not even in the top 20. Like, that's how underrated he really is.
I think you're 100% right. I think that folks outside of Winnipeg don't know. And remember, Ehlers is doing this with a lot less of opportunity, right?
Sure.
He's not getting that first power play time.
Mm-hmm.
He's not on the first line.
Yeah.
So the reality is, you know, he's done it with a lot less.
That's my point as to why he's sort of, you know, not appreciated outside of Winnipeg. He doesn't, you know, Laine is appreciated because he scores in bunches. He got five goals against St. Louis. You load up the howitzer on the power play. He gathers eyeballs from around the hockey world.
Right.
What Nikolai Ehlers does with, you know, numbers that, to your point, Dave, aren't as flashy as the other guys with less opportunity, what he does is he performs at 5-on-5.
Yes,
that's right.
And that's probably why he doesn't get the appreciation that he does.
And again, you know, for those who like the advanced stats, I mean, we've talked about offensive impact, zone entries. You know, Nikolai Ehlers was he second or third, Dave? He was definitely, you know, top five,
I believe.
And that's important. Like, he is the one-man zone entry, Nikolai Ehlers. And there are only too many guys on the Jets that can do that. And, you know, I would probably have Connor fourth out of the four. If you're talking about overall impact on the game, I would have Ehlers one, Wheeler two, Laine three, and then Connor four. They're all great players. And that's why it's so subjective, right? Like, when you're talking about, you know, whether it's a top 20 list or
you're talking about a half degree here, half degree there.
Exactly. I mean, all of those guys, I think, again, should be in the top 20. And that's why I always, you know, maybe that's just, you know, the passionate hockey fan in me. I see these lists, you know, a guy like to me, another guy when I saw that, who I was looking for, I realized he's only 20 years old. Andrei Svechnikov.
Right.
Like, to me, Andrei Svechnikov is a guy that's going to score 90 points in the NHL eventually. Like, what did he have last year? 60 or something? Like, he's 20 years old. Like, and I realized maybe this is based a little bit on, you know, what you've done to this point in your career. But if you're basing this on just skill, I think you can make an argument that Andrei Svechnikov is a top 10 skilled winger in the league.
Yeah, and I think to your point, I think this is given from more of a fantasy perspective, of a points perspective, as opposed to overall, who would you register as your top winger in the NHL. But look, the reality is that's one thing that, you know, when people talk about Winnipeg, what do they talk about? The abundance of wingers, the riches they have on the wing. So that's an area that, you know, of course you can pick one here. I mean, yeah, I would agree. I was a little surprised to see Wheeler as a top.
Yeah.
Simply because, again, like, his role is changing.
I think it's based on reputation.
I think so. I think his role is changing a little bit. And especially since he played center for a bit this season, right? So you've got to factor that in as well. But, and the omission of Nikolai Ehlers, I mean, especially when you factor in his contract. When you factor in his contract and his impact on the game, I mean, the guy is an unbelievable talent.
And I apologize, boys, for going on a tangent on Taylor Hall earlier, but, like, you know, you put him with Jack Eichel. I realized that last year with the Coyotes and the Devils, you know, Hall had a down year, but I think you play, you know, Hall full season with Eichel. Like, let's say there's, you know, we're talking about a 70-game season. I could see Hall putting up 70 points in a 70-game season playing with Eichel. Can't you guys?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, sure. He gets to play with a fantastically talented center for, I'm not going to say the
but
first time.
But he's also fantastically talented.
I know.
Like Hall basically took the Devils into the playoffs on his back. Like he was one of the main, if not the main reasons they even got into the playoffs that year. I'm a Devils fan. I know 3 years ago, the Devils weren't very good, boys. So, I mean, it was primarily Hall, and that's why he got the MVP. And that's all I'm saying. So again, take it with a grain of salt.
As they add Victor Olofsson to that line. Well, I mean, could you imagine?
Olofsson's a great player, and, you know, he was, you know, right up there for Calder Trophy voting, so yeah, you're right. I mean, and that's the thing. There's a lot of talented wingers in the NHL. Like, another player who I looked at, and I think Marchand was 5 on that list, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Like, I think you could make an argument, Brad Marchand.
6.
So I think you could make an argument, you know, Marchand is maybe the second or third best winger in the league. And that's just me.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I mean, there's no reason to get too upset about it because, like you said, it's strictly a subjective
sure.
ranking. I just found it to be, you know, it is interesting. And to be perfectly honest with you guys, when I was doing, when I was setting
Drew,
this
let's
up.
Let's be honest. What else are we talking about right now? Right?
When I was setting up the segment, it didn't even occur to me. For whatever reason, I must have just had a blank. It didn't occur to me that Ehlers wasn't on that list.
Yeah.
You know, because you see three Jets and you're like, okay, you know, the three that are most prominent and come to mind. But you're right. Ehlers is an omission on this list. And look, I live in Winnipeg and I cover this team on a day-to-day basis and I managed to omit
At least the NHL didn't omit Evgeny Malkin from their top 100 players of all time list.
Or Dale Hawerchuk. They did Malkin and Hawerchuk there. I mean, that was that's still a black mark that the NHL has managed to they're not going to be able to ever live that down because that doesn't make a lick of sense. But sera sera in that case, but it is anyway some interesting content in a time where there's not a ton of hockey content, as it were. When we come back, Jason Bell is going to join us. We'll chat with Jason. I haven't spoken to him in a little while. You know him from his work, of course, with the Winnipeg Free Press. Jason joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number one. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Winnipeg Free Press, he's a good friend of our program. We're pleased to welcome back Jason Bell. Jay Bell, how are you, buddy?
I am fantastic, but more importantly, how do you guys think I'm doing?
So far, you haven't screwed
tremendous.
Up, as far as I know. You know. That was a good answer to my question. So, so far, you get an A+.
Boss of mine used to use, and I used to think it was the funniest thing ever. But apparently,
well, there you go. We will grant it. Jason,
no,
always
appreciate
you giving time.
It's been a while.
Yes, of course, it has been a while. Your recovery, you're healthy. We know that you were public about your battle with COVID. There, you're feeling good.
I am, and I appreciate you asking. And of course, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, as we know what's happening in our city, in our province, in this country, and around the world, I mean, what happened to me was like a hangnail. So, I'm not going to fret too much about what happened to me. There's a lot of people suffering out there, so.
Good. Glad to hear that it went well with you there, Jay. Obviously, let's bring you on to talk about some hockey, a little bit more of a, you know, we all need a little bit of a break from the bad news that we've been inundated with for much of the last year. So let's talk about some hockey. It was good news for Cole Perfetti earlier this week. You were on the conference call where he was talking to the media about signing his entry-level deal with the Winnipeg Jets. You know, did you have one sort of more main takeaway from your time talking to Mr. Perfetti in that instance? You know, everyone talks about how well-spoken he is, and how polished he is at such a young age. What was your main takeaway, if you had one?
You know, I think for me, I was most impressed with just the fact that he seemed to be a kid with a lot of resolve, particularly because he was cut from the World Junior team last year. And, you know, he's sort of looking at small goals and taking incremental steps in his career, but certainly the goal right now is the World Junior team. And I mean, let's be frank, it's not going to be an absolute slam dunk that he makes it, as you guys talked about. I mean, is he going to make it as a center when Kirby Dach and Byfield and Cousins are already there? But he is so skilled, he's so heady, and guys like Crud Buttons and people that are a lot smarter than me when it comes to junior players just think the world of this kid. So, I mean, I think he's going to be on that roster, and he certainly is gunning for that. And I think for me, he wasn't talking about too much. And of course, he's being guided by the questions we ask. But it just seems like he right now the main goal is the World Juniors. He was cut last year. He's got a bit of a bone to pick there, and he wants to show the world that he deserves to be among Canada's best young players.
No, Jay, I agree with you that I think there's a really good shot that Perfetti starts the season with the Jets, but what do you think the chances are, you know, that he sticks with the Jets? Obviously, you know, we don't expect him to be, you know, a top six forward. Certainly we don't expect him to be a top six center, but, you know, if he ends up playing, you know, so well in the first four, five, six games, you know, and he scores three or four goals, I mean, there could always be the chance that he stays with the Jets, right?
Well, I'm going to take a step back, and I keep thinking about this January 1 start date as, and a 48-game schedule or a 52-game schedule. I mean, is it worth it for the Winnipeg Jets to have this audition for Cole Perfetti when he can come out of the World Junior? And certainly that's high-caliber stuff, but he has no training camp with the Winnipeg Jets. I mean, is it just far better for him to just to go in a shortened season with the OHL, you know, presuming they get going as well, really dominate at that level, and then come back in the fall, maybe a little bit bigger than 5'10", maybe a little bit heavier than 185, certainly with another season of that domination and in the OHL, and then with nothing else to prove, he comes back and maybe tries to make the Jets in 2021. 21-22. So, you know, I don't know if he's going to be there. Is it worth giving him a shot? But to your point, let's say that happens. I mean, if he does the Mark Scheifele route and he gives him an opportunity to make the team, you never know. I mean, they're not going to throw him between the two top wingers right away when they've just acquired Paul Stastny. So, I don't know if they need to give Cole Perfetti an audition this early, and as he is still 18, and yes, guys make the jump, but we should all maybe just sit back and relax a bit and let this kid develop.
You know, Jay, they say sometimes you can never go home again, but sometimes you can go home again, and then sometimes you can go home again a third time, and that's what we're seeing with Marco Dano, and I believe you're the only guy from Winnipeg media who had a chance to talk to him. And so what was your impressions having your conversation? Because, you know, it was funny because we were joking last week on the show about it felt like a 2016 press release, not 2020. But what did you get when you had a chance to have a conversation with him? What kind of impression did you get from Marco about the opportunity to come back to Winnipeg again?
Well, I hope he's not listening in. I kind of doubt he is. So I'm going to tell you a couple of things. So first of all, as a hockey player, I'm not a fan. That's first and foremost. And I've said it on your show. I've said it in pregame and postgame shows. A lot of deficiencies in that guy's game. But he's a really, really tough guy not to like personally, and I really do quite enjoy speaking with him. I always have. We've had some great discussions. I did a very, very long feature on him a couple of years ago on his upbringing. And, you know, he came from a split family, but his dad was a great pro overseas, but it was actually his mom that taught him how to skate. It's all very interesting. So I really, really like him. And so I enjoyed my conversation with him. And he just seemed genuinely happy to be coming back to an organization that he's comfortable with. You know, he's bounced around, obviously, and, you know, certainly has not lived up to what he probably people thought he was going to accomplish in the National Hockey League, particularly when he had that great start in Columbus as a rookie and was such a big piece of that Andrew Ladd trade. But, you know, I think he just wants to come back and just kind of reestablish some roots here. And I think he was genuine when he said that if he has to play for Pascal Vincent and be a leader down with the Moose, he's willing to do that, of course, at a drastically reduced salary. But he'll fight his way to try and maybe be a call-up. But I don't think we can underestimate the fact that he's going to try and scrap and claw in training camp and make this team as a fourth liner, which is not going to be easy when you consider how many guys are going to be fighting for fourth line roles on this team. I mean, you've got the Harkins and Perreaus and Appletons and Marco Dano. I mean, it's going to be very interesting to see what they do with that fourth line. So anyway, back to your point, I enjoyed talking to him, and it is a bit like, coming home for him. So that's certainly the way he described it to me.
Jason Bell is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Jason, you wrote about it in today's edition of the Winnipeg Free Press, the joint unsigned statement from the Winnipeg Blues and Winnipeg Freeze apologizing for their deliberate actions trying to violate the public health orders. What did you think of the actions of both teams, and what did you think of the response that they put out yesterday?
Well, you know, I didn't write the original stories, but I certainly followed it. Mike Sawatsky did a great job. And, I mean, across the other papers, Scotty Billick was doing a great job with it. And You know, it was. I think it was just disappointing. First and foremost, I think it was a really, really bad call and judgment. And I think if the organization, the joint organization, the ownership group is now suggesting that there was nothing nefarious being tried. It wasn't. They weren't trying to sneak these guys onto the ice under the shroud of secrecy. I'll let them off the hook in that respect. And they say that they didn't. They weren't trying to pull the wool over on anybody. They were pretty contrite in their message to the media last night, and they kind of put it down on their on paper their points of how things kind of went chronologically, and they certainly apologized. I mean, it was just if you're not going to say that it was just, you know, just a terrible, terrible move of, or and really deceptive, if you're not going to go that far, and I'm going to back off on that a little bit, but the judgment was just so poor in this climate. I mean, with what people are doing to try and stay safe and healthy in not just our market, but all across the world, just it wasn't the right time to think about, you know, 20 kids or 40 kids who just aren't getting enough ice time right now. That should just be the least of our concerns, so... I just kind of hope that I would like the league and Hockey Manitoba to continue to look at it, and whatever punishment they do or they don't mete out, it's up to them. But I hope a lesson was learned anyway.
Jay, just getting back to the Jets, we talked to your colleague Mike McIntyre last week about Jack Roslovic.
Who is that again?
Obviously,
who's
the
that?
Only yeah, exactly yeah. The only unsigned RFA left, and you know. Even though it's been a very quiet part of the NHL season right now, just waiting to find out when, you know, the 2021 regular season is going to start. We're not going to ask you when you think Roslovic is going to sign, but, you know, based on what's happened, and we know that Roslovic switched agents, his agent is Claude Lemieux. Mike McIntyre mentioned that last week on our show. Do you think that there's any chance that this trickles in, you know, to close to training camp, or do you think that the Jets are either going to move Roslovic or sign him before training camp does eventually start?
I've been in the camp that they were going to move him right from the end of the season, and it's not no big revelation on my part. I mean, I just think we've all sort of thought that. I mean, I think we probably thought that, you know, approaching draft day and then training camp day, would he be part of some type of, pardon me, training camp day, part of free agency? I mean, we thought, you know, if the Jets were going to bring in somebody, make some signing, they're going to have some salary go out. And he just seemed like a piece that they could move as part of something to shore up that, you know, that those holes on defense. And I mean, a lot of people still think there's that hole on the left side. I mean, they've got a lot of people there, but do they have a bona fide guy to play with Neil Pionk on that second unit? So I still think that he's going to get moved. I'm not sure what the holdup is on the contract. I mean, maybe he's just totally priced himself out of what the Jets believe he's worth. I don't think he's accomplished enough on paper to make, you know, gobs of money, but certainly he's probably in line for a pay raise. So I just don't see Jack Roslovic being in the mix when whatever the 2021 season gets going.
You know, Jay, from 1982 to about 1993, we had the benefit of watching the Smythe Division and the Canadian teams killing each other, the Canucks, the Jets, the Flames, the Oilers. Throw in the Leafs, the Senators, and the Canadians, you have yourself an all-Canadian division. You know, obviously, there's, you know, nothing has been good about this year with everything COVID-related, but for next year, what do you think that would mean to have an all-Canadian division?
I think it would be fantastic for hockey. I mean, you know, for the viewer, for us, if they allow guys like you guys and me in the building to watch, I think it would be exciting. But again, I'm just of the camp that the January 1 start date. I mean, these are much, much smarter people than me that are in these rooms making these decisions. But I don't get the January 1 start date. I don't just see how it's logical. And training camp in a month. I mean. It's a frightening scenario for me when I think of what's going on in the world right now, as far as every single city, the numbers are rising of COVID-19. I don't know how they're going to pull it off, but I mean, if we're blocking all that out and just talking about sheer sort of fantasy and what ifs, you know, watching the Jets go in and play, seeing them play Austin Matthews and a couple of times and seeing them go into Montreal or Montreal coming back here, I mean, it's terrific hockey, and we saw what Winnipeg and Calgary—a bit of a rivalry there in the little playoff. The Jets and Edmonton always have good games. I mean, McDavid will blast around the wing, and and you know, it's every city is going to be like that. I mean, watch Vancouver, how much they've increased. I mean, some of the top teams in the National Hockey League now are north of the border. So I like it. I like the idea. If it's the safest way to go, then let's do it. But I mean, again, the key word here is safety, and you know. They're talking about limited capacity in the buildings. I mean, how many people are they going to allow at the Bell MTS Place, and how do you work that out? Is it just the P1s and P2s and P3s get in, or will it be easy to put only a fraction of the fans in the building because nobody can spend money right now on hockey, and only 6,000 people want to get in anyway? So, I mean, these are all things I'm just throwing out here, but I just think there's so much has to be worked out before we even think about what division the Winnipeg Jets are going to be in.
Last question for you, Jay. We're about 75 minutes away from TSN 1290's coverage of the third round of the Masters. It's a who's who of a leaderboard. I know you're a golfer. Who do you like to come away with the green jacket on Sunday afternoon?
I am so embarrassed to tell you I have not watched a minute of it yet because I've...
Jason!
I don't want to be a whiner here, but I'm bouncing between news and sports, you might know right now, and I've... Yeah. The last couple of days have been pretty busy, but I've told my wife that I'll see her Monday... even though we live in the same house, I plan on being downstairs watching it all day today and all day tomorrow. I believe that I think DJ is going to win, but I think it's going to be an insanely great Sunday. And it just feels so weird that we're talking about this now and there's snow on my grass because usually in April they're still in the grass, but it's going away, not just coming. And yeah. Just you're so psyched because April is great, right? With the Masters and baseball starting and the NHL playoffs are going. So it's, and I've lived and breathed the Masters for years and years and years. And my boss Steve Lyons asked me yesterday what was my favorite memory, and I said, well, there is only one memory. It was the back nine in '86 when Jack won. It's my favorite sporting moment of my life, except for the '87 Canada Cup. So. I am going to get back into it this weekend. DJ is going to win, and we can talk about it over text or online, on the radio the next time we chat.
Sounds like a plan, Jason. The coverage is underway on TSN television right now, so we'll let you get to that. Kick up your feet. Enjoy yourself. Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, guys. And come on, Ez. Ted Lasso. It's on Apple. It's the best show going. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I
got
to check it out. I need something else to binge watch.
Take care,
check it out.
Take care, Jay. Thanks so much. When we come back, we discuss the NHL's slowly developing return to play plans for 2021. Much more to come. We want to hear from you as well. You can tweet at us at Illegal Curve. You can send us texts 1290. Standard messaging rates do apply. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
There's a growing appetite for both cost and revenue reasons for each team to remain in its home arena to start the 2021 season that allows for greater flexibility moving forward schedule-wise, and in addition to that, cuts back on travel. And the way to pull that off, Rod, would be to have teams come to each city for a series of games, whether it's two or three games. Think like a baseball schedule.
That's TSN senior hockey writer Frank Saravelli talking about the upcoming 2020-2021 NHL season.
That was an extra 20 in there, Drew.
No, 2020.
I thought you said 2020-2021.
2020-2021. Thank you. I have the ability to speak. I appreciate your contributions. It's 50-50 at best sometimes with you, but that's okay. Anyways, that was Frank Saravelli talking about the upcoming season and what seems to be the likelihood and almost inevitability at this point that there's going to be an all-Canadian division and, you know, a team is going to fly to a city and play a number of games in a row rather than fly all over as they would in a typical situation.
You know what that's called, right? It's called the AHL season.
Yeah,
it's funny how Frank referenced baseball. I'm like, you do realize they do that in the American Hockey League, where a team will come and play, you know, two games in a row in a city.
Or even more. Sometimes they play four games.
If it was the Moose and the Chicago Wolves, they played like 12 times last year. So yeah. I'm not joking. They one stretch, they played three times in a row. So, I mean, you do it in the American Hockey League already. Players, and we know the number is like over 80% of players have played in the American Hockey League. So, This isn't something that's a foreign concept.
I think the NHL should do this on a regular basis anyways.
Remember when they did that with the Jets and the Capitals that one year? Where the Capitals stayed and they played like a Wednesday?
No, they played a Friday-Saturday.
Friday-Saturday.
Yeah, they played back-to-back. And you know what? If you tell players that this is going to cut down on travel, I think the players are going to be fine with it. I don't see a problem with it. You lessen the impact on them. I'm talking about during a regular 82-game season right now. I think this should be the model of the future to some extent. No, maybe not.
Well, the problem is you can't in the sense that you get a weariness of seeing the same team. Like, you know,
play two. You don't have to play necessarily. You don't have to necessarily play three
games. Sure, but it's easy to sell that if it's the Toronto Maple Leafs or the Montreal Canadiens or a popular franchise. But what I'm saying is, you know, teams might not necessarily get, like, folks in Winnipeg may not get up in, and again, obviously this is relative because we don't know if there's going to be folks in the building, but, you know, in January, do you really want to see Arizona twice?
Well, it's not going to be in Arizona. These are your division rivals that you're
right,
going to play.
True, that's true.
So these are the teams you theoretically care the most about watching your team.
I guess that's a good point.
Yeah, I don't think teams in Arizona's division really want to play Arizona. No, I mean, they want to play them in terms of beating them.
Yeah, it's a guaranteed win.
Because they're
not
going to be very good. But, I mean, I think, you know, Scott Burnside did a really good job in The Athletic yesterday breaking down, you know, basically what transpired in the two calls yesterday, the NHL and the NHLPA. And, you know, in the article, the one thing that kind of stood out to me, in addition to, you know, the American teams, you know, basically saying that they would prefer to be in their own buildings, you know, is the fact that, you know, they're still optimistic there is going to be fans at some point in the regular season. And to me, that's something that, you know, I got to be honest, guys, when you look at what's happening across Canada and across the U.S., I mean, it would be all speculation, but you would have to think the earliest there would be fans in the stands would be what, April or May of next year? That's the earliest.
In Canada, it's a non-starter right now because we have authorities and health authorities who are smart.
Well, no, I mean, again,
in the U.S., you look at it right now, they've had people, they've had fans at football games, you know, for months now.
Well, I mean,
you saw what happened at Notre Dame last week, or I don't know if you did or didn't.
Yeah, they rushed the
Notre Dame beats Clemson. And
Rudy had a great game.
Yeah, and then what happens after the game? They won in double overtime. All the fans, the students, rush the field.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, the president of the call of Notre Dame has the nerve to go out and criticize the students for rushing the field as if it wasn't obvious that was going to happen. Meanwhile, this is the same president of the university who got COVID attending one of the super spreader events at the White House.
No,
so talk about
ridiculous
hypocrisy from that guy. I mean, you know, if somebody handed me a front row ticket to go indoors at anything right now, anywhere aside from my house or on Saturday mornings, Dave's living room, no thank you. I'm good. I don't need to go anywhere right now.
Well, and I think Jason makes a very good point in our last segment that cannot be underscored. I mean, people are hurting right now financially. I mean, and that's one thing that hockey can't take for granted. I mean, where is the market right now for people to be paying these types of, you know, fees to go to hockey games? I don't know that there is a big market. Now, look, there will be some people who can afford it, obviously. I mean, it's just the way the economy works. And the fact is, a lot of people are saving money by not going away on big trips, so they will have a little more disposable income. But it's something that needs to be factored because, you know, again, depending on the numbers, and we talked about it, hockey is a gate-driven league still.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have a TV contract like the NBA.
The NBA can start on December 22nd.
Of course the NBA can start because we talked about it last week. Mm-hmm. They have a TV contract that allows them to – look, what are fans? Fans are gravy. I mean, you obviously want fans because you're providing an income stream in a variety of different ways, whether it's through ticket purchases or concession purchases. You're making a lot of money off fans. But the NBA can still afford to not have fans. The NHL, again, I haven't seen the model where it says that they would be able to be viable, especially some of these. Look, we know that teams don't just think, similar to the on-ice play, the off-ice play, the health of your franchise is factored in. You know, teams aren't just saying, can we survive this month? You know, they're looking long-term. But the fact is, there's American franchises right now, we'll use Arizona, I'm not trying to pick on them, I think it's just a reality, that they really aren't in a situation where they can't really afford to have, you know,
pay salaries and not have any fans.
That's right. And not have the
economics are important, Dave, and I think you absolutely have to factor that in. There's going to be less people, not just here in Winnipeg, but, you know, everywhere, in every market because of, you know, what's happened with the unemployment rate and everything like that, right? That there are going to be less people. There's probably going to be, I guess what we're saying is less of an appetite, especially for those casual hockey fans, but also some season ticket holders. I mean, there might be season ticket holders in arenas across, you know, and this applies to the NHL, the NBA, other leagues that are just going to say, I'm not renewing my season tickets. I lost my job or I have less disposable income.
Right.
But I think at the end of the day, that is secondary to public health orders, really, mm-hmm. right? Like, we're in a code red here in Manitoba, and we might be in a code red, guys, till January. Like, I realize a lot of people, you know, are hoping that by early December we're out of this, but, you know, you see the numbers yesterday, we're still well over 400 cases a day. We could be in code red until January. If we're in code red until January, and we're talking about, you know, when fans could be in the stands, I mean, to me, April, May, June of next year is probably what you should be looking at. Like, and obviously, if there's an all-Canadian division, you know, we don't know if Winnipeg could always be an arena, but the way things are looking, it probably wouldn't be in Winnipeg. I mean, Vancouver.
Well, but they're not talking about doing a hub necessarily. They're talking about fly. I mean, sure. Everything's on the table.
Everything's on the table. But you know what I mean, Drew? Like, public health orders supersede anything else that's going on. Right now, with the amount of cases, we've seen record highs in the U.S., we've seen record highs in Canada. I mean, it's just not realistic to think these owners know that. There aren't going to be fans. And even if there are limited fans, I mean, it's only going to be in select arenas. So I think right now, most owners, I think, are accepting the fact that they're going to be playing in empty buildings for probably the whole season.
When we come back, Mike Zeisberger of NHL.com joins us for Look Around the League. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Bernstein's, of course, available still. They have all the different options available. Curbside pickup, delivery, give them a call. Whatever you need, Bernstein's Deli is there to help you out, especially in these trying times. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We want to hear from you. You can reach us here via Twitter, at Illegal Curve. You can reach us via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates will apply. And, of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From NHL.com, we're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Mike Zeisberger. Mike, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
Good morning, guys. It's always a pleasure to be on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. And I'll start off by saying I hope that you and your families and all the listeners and all the great people in Winnipeg are being safe and healthy. It's bizarre, chaotic times that we're living in, and just want to make sure that everybody, you know, toes the line and is healthy in these strange times.
Well said, Mike, and we would certainly echo those comments and send them back to you and yours in the greater Toronto area. I believe that is where you currently are, and if I'm wrong about that, my apologies. But, yeah, everyone, stay happy, stay healthy, and try and make the best of what is certainly a lousy situation. You know, Mike, obviously we're talking hockey, and we were spending last segment talking about the upcoming season and all the uncertainty that still surrounds everything, and it's understandable uncertainty, of course, given the times we're living in. You know, what was your main takeaway from the sort of the different conference calls or Zoom calls that took place yesterday with the NHLPA and then with the Board of Governors? Do you think we're any closer to having a resolution or at least having an idea as to what the next season is going to look like?
Well, you know, I think in a situation like this, there's got to be, you know, usually we talk about contingency plans or a contingency plan. I think that what the league has kind of in front of it is a number of contingency plans because, let's face it, we're aiming at a shooting target or at a moving target here. So it's great to say we'd like to play on January 1st and we'd like, you know, instead of doing a bubble thing, that teams will travel within a division. But given the way that COVID has changed everything and is changing on a daily basis in the world that we live in, I think it's smart of the league and the PA to keep their options open. And I'll go back to this. You remember back in the summer when we were talking about return to play, and for there was one particular week where it seemed that there was going to be an announcement that the games and the two hubs were going to be Vegas and Vancouver. And, you know, there was a lot of questioning out there is, hey, you know, among the media, among the fans, hey, you know, we keep hearing this is going to happen. Why hasn't there been an official announcement? Well, there wasn't an official announcement because, you know, when they were close to naming those two cities, all of a sudden, you know, the provincial government in British Columbia, you know, didn't think it was a safe situation. And Vegas became a hotspot, not only in North America, but the world. And a couple weeks later, we saw that they, you know, the league and the NHLPA had to call an audible at the line. And it ended up being in Edmonton and Toronto. Now, that worked, okay? There were no positive tests. The bubbles worked better than I, to be honest, ever thought they might. And that has nothing to do with the people that organized it. But, I mean, we were treading in uncharted waters here. And I think that they have to do the same thing here. So, yeah, they're looking at January 1st. Yes, they're looking at an all-Canadian division, which I think would be cool. And, yes, they're talking about going from city to city, teams doing that, and then maybe, say the Leafs go to Winnipeg, they would play two or three games there as opposed to one. But like I said, I mean, we don't know what COVID's going to be like in a week, 2 weeks. We don't know what it's going to be like tomorrow. So that's why I think people have to be a little bit patient. I'm pretty sure, you know, I think it's a safe bet to say that there will be hockey in the new year. But don't get frustrated if you don't hear a specific date in the next few days, because I think there's still a little bit of monitoring to do to see what's going on.
Mike, just over a week ago, the NBA announced that they're going to start their 2021 season on December 22nd, which would allow them to still put on their Christmas Day tradition of having games. Do you think that that puts any pressure on the NHL? We know that the NHL and the NBA, they share arenas. They're very close. Obviously, Gary Bettman, you know, previous history with the NBA. Do you think that has any impact, or do you think it's more that the NHL and the NBA are sharing information and they're trying to take away what they can?
Well, they're definitely sharing information, and in fact, Major League Baseball is too. They admitted that they were, you know, the hierarchy of Major League Baseball was talking with the NHL and vice versa when they went for the return to play. But yeah, I know basketball and hockey, being winter sports, in normal years, of course, sharing arenas, as you so astutely pointed out. I mean, they do speak all the time. You know, the one thing we have to remember about the NBA, their TV contracts are a lot more lucrative, than that of the NHL. So the interesting factor for me here is that the NBA can start a bit earlier, and they don't have to worry about as much about the fan revenues, fans being in the building, as maybe the NHL does down the road. But the NHL, you know, from a financial standpoint, if there's any way to play this season, they are going to try, definitely, because they need the revenues from the game being played. I know it's been thrown out there by some people. Why not wait till COVID dies down and just start it next October? Well, you know, the National Hockey League needs those revenues. The number one priority is being safe, but the number two, you know, if you can do it in a safe way, they need hockey to be played at some point. So I do think maybe there is a little bit of pressure because the NBA is starting, but I think the more relevant topics are, you know, the NHL's in-house issues in terms of, you know, it's important for them to have a season at some point, no matter when that is. But I will say this, guys. When you look, and I include the NBA, I know they didn't have any positive tests, but they were down in Orlando where, you know, Florida was a hot spot too. I've got to say, I don't think that any of the four major North American sports did return to play better than the National Hockey League. No sport stressed safety more than the National Hockey League. And, you know, and the NHLPA, they deserve it too. It's both of them working in conjunction, and I think they deserve a tip of the cap for that, for putting safety first.
Mike Zeisberger is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. You know Mike, of course, from his great work that he does with NHL.com.
You know, Mike, it's something you touched on briefly in your first answer, and it's something that we've been discussing throughout the course of the show, is how, you know, the one positive, I guess we can call it a positive, is the potential for an all-Canadian division, what it would be like, you know, throwing back to the 80s and 90s when we had the Smythe division, the Canucks, the Jets, the Flames, and the Oilers, obviously add in the Leafs, the Habs, and the Senators. But how good would that be for hockey, just to have all those Canadian teams, you know, battling it out for whatever this season looks like?
Well, I can't speak for our American friends, but I'll tell you, here north of the border, I mean, I think it would be amazing. And it's cool too for, you know, when you have, you know, you're in a country where you have two original six teams like Toronto and Montreal, who only make one visit a year to places like Calgary and Edmonton and Winnipeg and Vancouver. So I think it's going to be pretty cool for the fans in those cities, whether they're allowed in the building or not, to see their favorite teams playing some of these teams like that. I just think it's a really cool chance. And, you know, I can speak for the people in Toronto, but, you know, any chance that they can see, Austin Matthews going up against Connor McDavid more than once or twice a year, is very coveted. So, you know, I think it'll heat up some of the rivalries again, and I think that's really cool. We saw that a bit in the playoffs this year in the first round, obviously, when the Jets played the Canucks. Unfortunately, you know, the injury bug got the better of Winnipeg by the end of it. But in the overall scheme of things, I think it'll be great. And by the way, guys, will Hockey Night in Canada ever be more Hockey Night in Canada than every Saturday night when every game will be between two Canadian teams?
It would certainly be pretty entertaining. Mike Zeisberger, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mike, one final question for you. You know, we haven't spoken to you sort of since free agency, you know, not officially wrapped up, but you know what I mean, and since, you know, the trades that occurred went through. What team do you pinpoint in the league that is that you've circled as a team that's, you know, greatly improved from last year?
You know, that's and I'm not trying to you know, shed the question, but that's tough to say because I look at a team like the Ottawa Senators. I think they're a lot better. Are they going to make the playoffs? No. Did they improve themselves from where they were? Significantly, yes. And I think you look at I'm just intrigued by a lot of the, you know, by the players in different places, so to speak. I mean, you know, in Winnipeg, Paul Stastny coming back, I thought that was pretty cool. I mean, he had, you know, he's been there, done that. You know, so he's familiar, his teammates are familiar with him. But how much does Joe Thornton have left in the tank when him coming to the Toronto Maple Leafs? I mean, he won't be relied upon like he was earlier in his career, but I still think this guy, especially on the power play, sees the ice as good as anybody. Lafreniere going, in the draft to the New York Rangers. I mean, they've built a nice cafe. You know, we saw what Panarin did last year. They built a nice cafe of young talent in New York. And then you look at it, I can't predict, but there's so many like teams where you look at them and say, how are these guys going to fit in? How is Braden Holtby going to do in Vancouver? How is Alex Pietrangelo going to do in Vegas? Because I love the fact that what he brings to the table for Vegas. But they had to let some good players go to create cap space. Does Vegas we mentioned Stastny for one. Does Vegas have the depth now? They've got a lot of top-end talent, but do they have enough depth? What's Markstrom going to be like in Vancouver? In Calgary. So there are, and for me, number one, Taylor Hall. I mean, how surprised was everybody when he went to Buffalo? But will that make the Sabres make the playoffs? I don't know. We don't even know what division they're going to be in, so we don't know what teams they have to beat out. But is it going to be fun to watch Jack Eichel and Taylor Hall on the ice at the same time? Damn right it's going to be. So to say which teams have improved, I still think there's a lot of debate about that. But it's really cool, all the intrigue that there's going to be, because there were so many guys that ended up in places that I didn't think they were going to go. I didn't think Holtby would end up in Vancouver. I didn't think that Calgary would try to sign half of Vancouver's roster, or so it seems. And I certainly didn't think Taylor Hall was going to end up in Buffalo. So I think that's going to be pretty cool. And can you imagine, going back to your first question, guys, about or your earlier question about an all-Canadian division. Just think now, I mean, Calgary and Vancouver play a lot as it is, but you increase those games. How important does Jacob Markstrom become, and how much is he under the spotlight every time Calgary plays Vancouver? So there's a lot of cool sidebars to this, and hopefully, when hockey does return, and it will return, we get to see some of these things play out.
Mike Zeisberger covers the NHL for NHL.com. Mike, always appreciate your time, your insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. Have a great rest of the weekend and stay healthy.
Hey, guys, thank you. Call anytime. And like I said, for you and your families and all the listeners and all the fine people in Winnipeg, please be safe and be healthy. Take care.
Take care, Mike.
You too, Mike.
Thanks so much. When we come back, we look at the Metropolitan Division. Which team is most improved? Which team is most perplexing? Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Adam Pellick dumps it all the way around. Goes by Sanheim. Nelson has it to the slot. Darting is Brassard. What a move there. He'll lay it across. Andy Green scores! What a play! 6:47 left in period one. 2-0 Islanders.
That was from this past year's bubble playoffs. Andy Green scoring for the New York Islanders against the Philadelphia Flyers. Time for another look around the NHL. We're going to start with the Metropolitan Division, talking about our selections for most improved team, least improved team, most perplexing, and so forth and so forth. But first, this segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. And you're probably saying, well, Drew, how can they be having any shows right now? There's code red. And the answer to that is they're doing a virtual comedy show next Friday. Everyone needs to laugh right now. I mean, come on. If you don't need to laugh now, when do you need to laugh? Tickets available, information available, rumorscomedyclub.com. You can also find all the information on their social media. I say it every week. Go out, do what you can, support your small businesses, buy a gift card. Christmas season, holiday season's coming up. Everyone's going to want to go back and have a night out when we can finally have a night out again. Well, there's no better place to have a night out than with our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Tickets available, information available, rumorscomedyclub.com. Do whatever you can. Everybody in the business community appreciates it right now. So let's talk about the Metropolitan Division, where we, of course, the New York Islanders sort of have been one of the top teams in that division, led by the impact of Barry Trotz behind the bench there. And, another offseason where a lot of teams shuffled things around. So let me ask you this. Most improved team in the Metropolitan Division after the vast majority of free agency has been completed. Who's the most improved team in your mind there, Mr. Ginsburg?
Yeah, it's not easy as other divisions, right? And
yeah,
you know,
this
I think
such a it's a very there's a lot of parity in the Metropolitan
Division. Yeah, it's parity, but it's also like it wasn't a very active division, right? Mm-hmm. Like you had Pittsburgh, it seemed like, you know, back in I guess that was September now, it seemed like they were making a move every week, right? Like it seemed like we were talking about a different trade, and a lot of those trades happened with the Minnesota Wild, right?
Yeah.
Billy Guerin, but you know, you look at this division and, you know, certainly Washington was not a very active team, right? Like Justin Schultz, you know, a pretty good move.
Yeah.
You know,
Lundqvist.
And Henrik Lundqvist, which that's not insignificant, right? Because, you know, you lose Braden Holtby and Ilya Samsonov is obviously, you know, going to be your number one guy there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, bringing in Henrik Lundqvist is significant because, you know, he's a guy that, you know, we don't have to talk about his resume. He's a future Hall of Famer, but that's a guy that, you know, basically makes you just as good as you were last year in net, if not better than Holtby. But, you know, you look at some of the other teams we mentioned, Pittsburgh, like, I don't know if Pittsburgh got any better this offseason. Like, some of the moves they made, you know, I kind of think they kind of moved sideways. Philadelphia is one team that, you know, basically didn't do anything. Carolina, Jesper Foss was a move. It's funny, last week we had Vince Mercogliano, who covers the Rangers for USA Today. I forgot that Jesper Foss was signed by the Hurricanes. That was actually a pretty sneaky signing. Yeah. He's a good winger, so, you know, that was a good move. But aside from that, the Hurricanes weren't very active. You look at Columbus, we know that they still have to sign Pierre-Luc Dubois. They weren't tremendously active, aside from acquiring Max Domi for Josh Anderson, so I like that move. So, you know, when you look at the totality of this division, you know, I would probably have to say the New York Rangers improved the most, and that wasn't because of a trade or a signing that they made. It was because they got Alexi Lafreniere and won the NHL draft lottery, right? Like, I look at the Devils, and, you know, Corey Crawford was a nice signing. You know, Ryan Murray, I think, was a signing that went really under the radar. Yeah,
they,
you know,
traded
they gave,
for him.
They gave up a fifth-round pick
yeah.
to get Ryan Murray, and that's a second overall pick. Dave, you know that. Mm-hmm. And he's a guy that, you know, is probably more suited to be a second-pairing defenseman, not a first-pairing defenseman, but, you know, and they acquired Dmitry Kulikov. So I think the Devils, you know, got better, a little bit better. I don't know if they're going to be a playoff team next year. So overall, and the Islanders, again, you
got a whole bunch to go through here. Pick a team.
Well, no, but I mean, it's tough because I don't have a clear-cut winner. Like, overall, I would probably say, again, I said, you know, it was the Rangers, or maybe the Capitals, even though those moves are pretty small, but no team, like, the team that, to me, again, I'm getting ahead of myself here, but the team that's probably the most perplexing to me is Philadelphia, because they literally did not make one move.
Dave?
Well, I think what the Flyers are doing is they're going to rely on kind of a youth movement from within. They've got a lot of depth in their prospect organization.
Continued development from within.
From what they're looking at is saying, well, look, are we going to bring in veterans who are going to stagnate the growth of some of our prospects who are ready to make the jump from the Phantoms of the AHL to the Flyers of the NHL? So, I you know, if you're telling me what team won the best, I would go with the New Jersey Devils. You know why? Because their reverse retro jersey is unbelievable.
Yeah, but no, but all,
although hold on, quickly, I would have gone with the Colorado Rockies, which were obviously the precursor to the New Jersey Devils in the 80s. But that jersey is
and the Hurricanes, right, going with the Whalers.
With the Whalers, back. Yeah.
But in all seriousness, right, like Kulikov at best is a third pairing defenseman. Ryan Murray, though, and Corey Crawford, like those two players, right there.
Mm-hmm.
And the three first round draft
picks. Well, I was going to say, like, they got all the draft picks. The Devils are an interesting team. Again, they've got some young, they've got a lot of young talent.
Yep.
And so to me, they're not a team that you're looking at. You know, we had Matt Lachlan on about 3 weeks ago who was talking about the Devils and just talking about all these promising young players developing together. They're a few years away, but they've got some nice talent. And the addition of Corey Crawford kind of not insulates this team, but, like, you know, it means that they're probably not getting buried on a nightly basis. And I think that's important. You know, we talk about young guys developing in a winning culture. You're not going to win all the time, but you want to be in the games. And I think that's important for why they went out and got a guy like Corey Crawford.
Yeah, and Mackenzie Blackwood had a very underrated season.
Absolutely.
And we know, guys, the model, in not just the last year, but, you know, for the last several years, you have to have two really good goalies. And unless you're Winnipeg, who has a Connor Hellebuck, or unless you're, you know, Tampa Bay with Andre Vasilevsky, there aren't that many teams that are going to have their number one goalie playing 80-85% of the games, right? You got to have two capable goalies, and the Devils now have above average goaltending.
Well, one of the most perplexing teams in the entire NHL to me continues to be the Nashville Predators. And when we come back, we're going to speak with their play-by-play broadcaster, Willie Donick, about what's going on in Nashville with the Jets' Central Division rival and how their offseason just leaves me sort of scratching my head as where this Predators franchise is going. Willie Donick up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio, Dave's living room, by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Manuk. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us here via text message. Send your text to 129090. And, of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio, that's available at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Willie Donick. Willie is, of course, the Nashville Predators play-by-play broadcaster. He joins us from Music City. Willie, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
It's great to be here. I'm doing great.
That's great. They appreciate your time, Willie. Obviously brought you on to talk about the Predators. And in our previous segment, we were going through the Metropolitan Division, and we were talking about our most perplexing team given their off-season moves. And then to preview and intro your appearance on the show, I said that, to me, the Predators have to be one of the most perplexing teams in the entire NHL for their moves or lack thereof in the off-season. You know, as we sit here on the 14th of November, you know, what is this Nashville Predators team entering next season?
Well, they're a team that wanted to change their dynamic and shake it up. They were not satisfied with the direction that they were going. If you take a look, they had pretty much the same nucleus for the last three or four seasons, and the results in the postseason just weren't what they had been a couple of years before. So they felt like they gave that entire group enough time to get it done. They've kept certainly some of the core, but they wanted to make a pretty good shakeup in particular down the lineup, and they want to get a little younger. So I think the biggest theme is they want to have a little more edge to their lineup, and they want to have a little more youth to their lineup. So that I think is the approach.
You know, Willie, everyone looks at this Predators team and I think says the same thing in terms of, you know, up the middle, really strong with Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson. But I think, you know, you could always get a little bit more. And I think both of those players were pretty good in the playoffs. But I think maybe it hasn't quite worked out like, you know, David Poile and, you know, Predators management expected. Is that a fair comment in terms of if this Predators team is going to get to that next level, get back to, you know, being a top team, not only in the Central, but the Western Conference, those two players are really going to have to drive the bus?
Oh, I don't think there's any question. I think you're being kind to say that they need to get a little bit more. I think those two guys are probably the biggest key to the success of the team. If you take a look, when you're investing that much money in two guys, around $8 million a year, you just simply have to have more production. And you're right. I think Ryan Johansson, and he was reunited with Philip Forsberg and Victor Arvidsson in the playoff series or the qualifying round, and they played spectacularly in a series that really they should have won against the Coyotes. They outplayed them, but they just didn't find ways to win. Darcy Kuemper played well, and the Predators just did not get the key goal at the key time. But those three guys played very well. Matt Duchene, on the other hand, just never seemed to hit the groove and find the right combination of players. And so that, I think, was part of the shakeup too, is what do they try to do to bring out the best in him? And, of course, he has been the first to say, I got to do more. I got to find ways to be better. So you're right. Down the middle is key. I think just the movement, the buyout of Kyle Turris was another thing that was a drag on just the psyche of the team. They invested so much money down the middle, and they weren't getting the results, particularly from Turris, Duchene, and Johansson. So it's now really up to Johansson and Duchene to play better, and there's going to be a shakeup in the third and fourth lines for sure.
You know, Willie, last year, if you paid attention to the AHL, which we do here, the Milwaukee Admirals were a team you just didn't want to face. They were just so good last season. You talked about the youth movement in your first answer. So which players do you think from the AHL are going to make that jump next season for the Predators?
Well, you hit on it. They had a great year. And I think Scott Nichol, who basically, you know, the former Predator veteran, played for a number of different teams, but now he basically runs Milwaukee and the player development part of this. He's very high on a couple of guys. And the guy that is probably going to get the most attention is Eli Tolvanen, who he's gone on an interesting curve since they drafted him late in the first round after they had gone to the Stanley Cup final. They thought they might have somebody because he was lighting it up in the KHL at age 18. He had a great Winter Olympics, albeit against the non-NHL players. But they thought he might be one of those rare guys that they could drop right in the lineup and he could start producing. But he was not that. So they took a step back. They put him in Milwaukee the last couple of years. They told him basically, we know you can shoot. We know you can score, but we want you to work on the North American game, the 200-foot game. They put him on the penalty kill, and they wanted him to work on all those facets of the game to be a winning player. And by all accounts, he's done that. He's made strides in that area. And it's ironic because with all that's happened with the pandemic, they went ahead and loaned him back to the KHL, so he's playing there again. But he's the guy that they really think and hope is ready to blossom 3 years later. And he's still very, very young. He's just turning 21, I think. So I would circle him, and I would circle Yakov Trenin, who's had some very good moments in the NHL when given a chance. He's got a little size and edge, which is something that I think they're desperately trying to get into their lineup. He had a huge year in Milwaukee last year, and he's playing in the KHL right now. So those are the two guys I think they hope will take a bigger role next year.
Willie Donick is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Willie is the play-by-play broadcaster for the Nashville Predators. Willie, you were talking about Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene and how the team needs to get more from those players. I mean, at this stage in their career, you know, Johansson 28 right now, Duchene 29, you know, they've been around for so long. Are they not sort of what they are at this point? You know, is it maybe a little foolhardy for the Predators to think that these players have another level that they can reach night in, night out, if we haven't seen it as of yet?
Yeah, I think it's a fair question. I think looking for another level is probably not fair to those guys. Because I think you're right. Once you hit the late 20s, you pretty much are who you are. But I think if you look at the production of both of those guys last year, they'd be the first to tell you they were well below what they have been for most of their career. So I think just wanting to get them back up to their regular level of production. And for Johansson, you know, he had 36 points in 68 games. That's well below his regular pace. Usually he leads the team in assists. He's probably not the 30-goal scorer that he was once upon a time, but he should be able to get you 17 to 20, 60 to 65 points. And Duchene is a guy that also dropped off big time last year from what they had come to expect from him before. So I think next level is probably unrealistic, but back to what they average over a 3 or 4 year span, I think is something that should be very reasonable to expect. And both of those guys would be the first to tell you they believe they can do that.
Willie, the Predators have an 18-year-old prospect that they're pretty excited about. His name, of course, is Yaroslav Askarov. He's playing in the Continental Hockey League right now, and there looks like there's going to be a passing of the torch, you know, from Pekka Rinne to Askarov eventually. How soon do you think that can happen? Like, are we talking about a year from now, a couple of years from now? Because I know that a lot of scouts thought Askarov could go, you know, as high as maybe even fourth or fifth overall. And, you know, the Predators look like they have an ace goalie there in their system.
Yeah, they were actually very excited that he was sitting there in the first round. And we were actually doing some draft coverage that night. And they did a pretty good job of keeping it hush-hush that they were actually interested in a goalie. There were a lot of other guys that were floating around there that they thought would land there. But when they had a chance to grab him, they did, which is a little uncharacteristic. They have been burned twice in the past drafting a goalie in the first round. Way back towards the beginning of their existence, They drafted a guy named Brian Finley, and he just never made it. And the same was true of another young man. They had Chet Pickard, whose brother Cal ended up being an NHL goalie and a decent one. Chet was the first-round pick, and he never played a game in the NHL. Just one of those stories. So I was a little skeptical that they would be interested in Askarov, and we got a chance to interview him that night. He was a real enthusiastic kid. He didn't speak a lick of English at all. So I think they're to answer your question, they're taking the long view. They've got Pekka for another year. They really want to take a look at UC Soros. So I'm thinking, and they've said this, David Poile said it that night, they probably estimate two more years in the KHL, because I think he's under contract there for that long. And then they would bring him over and start taking a look at where he is at that time. Maybe play some games in Milwaukee. Maybe at that time he's ready to crack the lineup. We'll see. He's awfully young. And as you guys know, sometimes you just don't know what you've got in the goalie. But there's so many people that are pinpointing this kid as a guy that is extra special, right, among goalie prospects in a world and a sea of guys all around the globe, that sometimes you get hype and it takes years and years to develop. I mean, take Pekka. He was not the regular goalie. He spent 3 years in Milwaukee after getting drafted in the eighth round. So there's a lot of paths a goalie can take to greatness.
You know, Willie, when I was doing my 2019 draft prep, there was one player I had my eye on for the Jets when they were selecting 20th overall was Philip Tomasino, and he obviously fell to the Predators with the 24th overall pick. What kind of player do they have in him, and do you anticipate him playing a role with the Preds next season, or do you think he'll be in the AHL?
Well, that's probably the biggest wild card question. When I was telling you about they want to get younger, they are trying to leave a pathway for him to maybe make the team. Now, he's still so young, I believe, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know that he's eligible to play in Milwaukee this year. I think it would be one of those things where he's got to make the team or he's got to go back to juniors for one more year. And they rarely consider a guy like that. Almost always, they'll put him on the slower track, put him in Milwaukee, and take his time. But they have said outwardly they think he could make the team this year. I'm a little bit leave it when I see it. But when they did return last year for the summer in that brief summer camp before the return to play, he was outstanding. He flashed in the scrimmages, in the inter-squad games. He's got a lot of skill. He came a long way in his first year. In the prospect camp, he stood out. So he seems to be growing at a rapid rate. But we'll see what they do. I still think they have what they have done in letting Craig Smith go to free agency, who's now with the Bruins. They let Mikael Granlund go. They traded Nick Bonino and brought in Luke Cunning to change the dynamic, get a little younger. So there is some flexibility, not only in the lineup and the holes that are there, but also in the salary cap. They have a lot of room, cap space, and they have said they are certainly willing to use it. So I think they're biding their time. They might make one more big addition at some point before the season starts, whether it's a team that is looking to shed payroll and there's a good player available at a good bargain, or maybe somebody still sitting out there like a Mike Hoffman. All of that will play into whether Tomasino gets a chance to make it, because it's one of those things where you probably don't want to stick him on the fourth line. You want him, just like Tolvanen, if they're going to play, you want them to be able to make it in the role that they're cut out for. That's a skilled player.
Willie Donick is the Nashville Predators play-by-play broadcaster. Obviously, the Predators and the Jets, normally division rivals, unlikely to be the case in 2021, but I'm sure we'll see you back as a division rival.
What are we going to do without the Predators-Jets battles? You know, I guess we're going to take that off on the side for a little bit.
Well, we can still have you on the show, though, Willie. That doesn't change anything.
Oh, anytime.
Yeah, we'll still
anytime.
Talk.
And I was waiting this time. Still... Last year at this time, we were asking about the Kentucky-Vanderbilt football game. I think I was on the two teams are playing again today. Last year, the two teams were playing, and it looks like it's going to be another rough day for the Commodores. Kentucky's not that great, but Vanderbilt's got a lot of problems.
Yeah, well, I was.
You tell him, Willie.
No. He's saying Will. The Commodores are the Vanderbilt team, Ezra.
Okay.
Not Kentucky's the Wildcats.
Yeah, but you're Kentucky.
And I'm aware. And he's saying that Vanderbilt is the worst of the two teams.
Oh, okay.
I'll explain it to him later. Okay.
I don't understand college football, Willie.
Yeah, clearly not. Or the English language, apparently. But yeah, Willie, I was trying to be the mensch and not bring up the game. But kickoff's in about 12 minutes, which means the game should be over in about 14 minutes. Anyways, that's for another day.
Well,
Willie, appreciate it.
I hope Vanderbilt can be competitive, but we shall see. But guys, great to talk to you.
Likewise, between you and our buddy Josh Cooper, you're our two Vanderbilt guys. Whenever we need to talk about,
we were on the Willie. You know, just quickly, we were on the Vanderbilt campus about a year ago. We went to a friend's bachelor party in Nashville, beautiful city, and that campus is beautiful.
And
as well.
You and Dave went to find a kosher restaurant.
Yes,
I'm not mistaken.
We did. Yeah, and we ended up settling for a slice of pizza, I believe.
And we found the Parthenon.
There you go. You found the Parthenon. Nice. One of the more bizarre things in Nashville.
I can't wait to go back.
Willie, thank you, buddy.
No question.
Love that.
All right. Yeah. Shout out to my fellow Commodore Josh Cooper. Good man. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Take care. Thanks. Willie Donick, play-by-play broadcaster for the Nashville Predators. When we come back, one final segment. We'll do an update, a Bodog update on the Masters leaderboard, talk about a player agent survey in the Athletic as well.
No big deal. We were in Nashville.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment Saturday morning, an abbreviated edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Coming up at the top of the hour, we bring you exclusive radio coverage of the third round of the Masters going on right now at Augusta National. That's leads seamlessly into a Bodog.net scoreboard where we'll look at the leaderboard. The leaders are just teeing off for the start of their third round. Canadian in contention as well. Corey Connors coming off of a 7-under round of 65 for his second round is already 1-under through 3 today. So he's moving up the leaderboard into a tied for 16th. He's 6-under, 3 shots behind the 5-way tie of leaders at 9-under. For those of you Tiger Woods fans, he's even par through 4 holes today. He's minus 5 on the tournament. Phil Mickelson, he's 1-over for the day through his first 2 holes. He's at 4-under for the tournament. And also great to see Mike Weir make the cut. He's at even par so far. He's only played 1 hole, but he sneaks in to make the cut at 1-under for the tournament so far. Also, the other Canadian in the field, Nick Taylor, he's at even par through his first hole, even par on the tournament as well. So nice to see 3 Canadians make the cut at Augusta in this weird November edition of the Masters.
You have to think that the TV ratings for this year's Masters are going to be through the roof.
You would think so, because no one's got anywhere to go, and it's a hell of a leaderboard,
exactly.
And it's pretty, it's the Masters, so they always have good ratings to begin with. Plus, it's on earlier in the morning, so you get all that bulk of early morning coverage, and then it'll be the NFL sort of after that. So complete coverage of the Masters today and tomorrow, third and final rounds here on TSN Radio 1290. Brought to you by Bodog.net. Head to Bodog for sports odds, poker strategy, and free-to-play casino games. That is the Bodog.net scoreboard, of course. Bodog.net, make a play.
Web 65 on the Spider-Man. And that's what's going on at Augusta. Say amen at the corner. Amen. Say amen at the corner. Amen. Say amen at the corner. Amen.
Had to throw that in there. That's what's going on at Augusta.
Okay, Drew.
That's courtesy of the Chris Vernon Show. Chris is a radio host in Memphis and also does some podcasting with The Ringer. So he does a Masters update unlike anything you've ever seen before. You can find it online in case you hadn't seen it already.
I feel like this is a guy that Huss has had on the warm-up.
It seems like a very Huss guest for the warm-up.
Yeah, I feel like Remus has booked him.
It's incredible. I do encourage you to check it out. You can find it online. Chris Vernon is his name. And, you know, Augusta.
Mike Vernon's cousin.
Yeah. Augusta National, which is known for being so conservative and so staid. And so proper behavior, and this is the complete polar opposite of it. And I can assure you that there's no chance Chris is ever going to be able to do that.
Do either of you guys own a green jacket?
No, I don't.
Do you guys own a green jacket?
It's a bold fashion statement.
It is. It really is.
I don't own a green jacket.
No. I like to stick to the blacks, the grays.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is
I have a blue jacket.
You have a, like a navy?
Yeah, like an insect.
Yeah. Bought it in the States.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, a Navy suit jacket.
As his favorite place. As his favorite place in Florida.
Joey Bank.
No. No, that's where you went after you only brought one shirt to my wedding, Ezra, and then spilled butter on it.
Yeah,
the first
it was butter
event.
Sauce. I got a little excited with the dinner there and got some butter on my shirt, so I had to go to Joseph A. Bank.
It still begs the question. You knew you had at least 3 or 4 days worth of events, and you brought one shirt.
That checks out.
I mean, my other shirts were, short sleeve button up shirts, so I didn't realize that I needed to have, some long sleeve shirts. So
it was a wedding. You have to wear pants, too.
May you be blessed with wisdom.
Yes. The wisdom that you have is overwhelming. That's it for the Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. A big thank you to our guests, Willie Donick, Mike Zeisberger, and Jason Bell. In case you missed any of the program, it'll be available for download on IllegalCurve.com. It's on TSN 1290.ca. It's wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review it, subscribe to us. Let us know what you think of the show. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Sean doing a great job back at the station. For Ezra Ginsberg, for Dave Manuk, I'm Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.